Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being here, everyone. Brian Kilmeade. It's a Brian Kilmeade show coming your way. I've been with you all week long. Thanks so much for being here, too. Last night was in the National Archives over in Washington, D.C., able to speak to the Heritage Foundation and talk about history because we're coming up on year 250. And, of course, this is our 248th birthday in about 3 weeks. In between that, all we have is a debate. And we have a sentencing of a former president. Excuse me, that's after, I should say. Right after that, the sentencing of a former president. Big hour. Admiral James Tarvitas is standing by. Benjamin Hall doing a special on the rise of anti-Semitism in America and how it relates to what's happening in Gaza. So for now, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
One of the things her cohort does is yoga. They do it at Hillel. It's not sponsored by Jews. It's not Jewish yoga. It's just yoga in the Hillel building. And a few weeks ago, four of the undergraduates said they wouldn't go anymore because it was at Hillel. And I looked at her and I said, well, then what happened? She said, well, we moved yoga. I was like, really? Really? You moved yoga? How about that's unacceptable?
Sheryl Sandberg weighing in on anti-Semitism. It's raging in America to a level I have not seen in my lifetime, and it's long past time to act. We discussed a plan of action before this boils over. Can we? The epic violence is beginning to take root. If you've seen some of that subway footage from Wednesday in New York City, this Hamas wannabes must be arrested and interrogated so we can find out who exactly is behind this madness.
Number two.
It's remarkable to watch the Biden administration say, boy, we've done such a good job. We have NATO. Everybody's working hand in hand. No, you've gotten tens of thousands of Ukrainians killed.
Right.
You failed to deter. 1,200 Israelis dead on your watch.
That is the former Secretary of State and maybe future Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Our foreign policy struggles on full display as President Biden meanders in his G7 while blowing off a Ukrainian peace summit tomorrow to be with celebrities in Hollywood. Where are the priorities? We'll break it down.
Number one.
This is an outstanding group of people. I'm with them 1,000%. They're with me 1,000%. We agree just about on everything. And if there isn't, we work it out.
President of the United States, trying to be the future president of the United States, 45 and 47. President Trump back on the Hill telling Republicans to get on his side and help them win and help him win. And also a meeting with Mitch McConnell. It seems like for now, those two are getting along. As I mentioned, Admiral James Tarvitas, the 16th Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, a member of the Carlyle Group and author of several bestsellers. His latest is 2054, a novel of the next world war. Admiral, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Brian, and it's Friday.
It is Friday. Thank goodness. So, Admiral, first off, we look at the G7. It's kind of an odd time politically, and that is that most everybody there has their job in jeopardy except for the Meloni of Italy.
Yeah, it's quite striking, the anti-establishment wave that's kind of running across the world right now. And we just had... fortunately, free and fair democratic elections for 2 billion people, Brian, in India, in Europe, in South Africa, and in Mexico. That's a good thing. But what is notable is most of those elections showed a certain body check against the establishment candidate. And you're absolutely right. These are G7, the leader of the 7 largest economies in the world. 6 of them have leaders who are facing significant tough elections coming or just went through a tough one and were body checked.
So what do you think about this agreement we have with Ukraine? I mean, there's nothing that's basically an executive order. Things like within 24 hours, if they're attacked, we have to respond. There's no military alliance like obligation, like Rule 5 of NATO. But what do you think of what was signed yesterday?
I think it was good. And I think a Trump administration would probably support that agreement. And what it does is it lays some tracks out there that run for theoretically 10 years, which are not a blank check. As you know, the money that we provide to support Ukraine is not only matched by the Europeans, but it comes back to our own defense industries. And it provides some reassurance to the Ukrainians, and most importantly, it's a shot across the bow of Vladimir Putin. So think of it as NATO light. They're not quite inside NATO. It's not an ironclad guarantee, but it's a halfway house. Ultimately, Ukraine will probably be in NATO. I'll close with this. That's a good thing, because they will come out of this war with the best, most experienced and capable ground forces in Europe.
I just worry about the attrition, 45 million as opposed to 150 yeah. million population. They do are getting casualties. I think the Russians are losing as many as 2,000 a week. So it's amazing how little they care about their people. They're putting them in as cannon fodder. But it looks like Kharkiv is stabilized. Nobody thinks it's going to fall yet. I'm going by everybody else's account. But I asked General Keane this morning. He said, don't overreact to the Russian ships in Cuba. But this does bother him. Cut 27. Listen.
The Ukrainians have already proven in Crimea, Brian, where they are systematically reducing Russian military capability in Crimea. It's not getting the visibility it deserves. The Ukrainians aren't advertising much about it either. But this is formidable restriction on the Ukrainians. And as a result of it, think of what's happened. Russia's moved its capability forward. It's contributed to the success that they've had around Kharkiv. They don't have to put forces there to protect these logistics nodes and bases, because they know it's a sanctuary and U.S. weapon systems are not going to be fired. The Ukrainians can use some drones, but they can't carry the explosives that sophisticated ATACMS can.
So he's upset they can't go deeper into Russian territory because the Russians just back up to a certain level and they just move with unimpeded. Your thoughts?
It is time that the Biden administration fully takes the gloves off the Ukrainians. And they've, as usual, they've been too incremental in doing that. However, in the last couple of weeks, too late, but at least it's a step in the right direction. The Biden administration has green-lighted the use of U.S. military systems to attack inside Russia. We don't know exactly how far, or are there other restrictions. My view is it's time for Ukraine to use whatever weapons at their disposal, be they U.S., French, Ukrainian, German, Brit, whatever. It ought to be allowed by the nation that provided that system for them to strike into Ukraine. Two other really quick points. A good thing is the way in which the Ukrainians, using drones, exquisite intelligence, surface ships, have sunk about 40% of the Russian Black Sea fleet. That's very powerful. And then to the Russian ships pulling into Cuba, frankly, Brian, there's less there than meets the eye. Every year or two, the Russians send a few ships into the Caribbean. They go to Cuba. They go to Venezuela. That's really the extent of their capability. We track them throughout that little voyage. We get a lot of intelligence out of it. Doesn't upset me or worry me. We ought to be focused on getting the weapons to Ukraine and getting authorization to the Ukrainians to strike inside Russia. That's what will get Vladimir Putin's attention.
So, you know, the counter argument to that is what about escalation? That's all I hear from the administration. I'm worried about escalation. If not coming Friday out, saying it by their actions. And it's resulted in incremental slow walking of weapons and slow walking of change of policy. What is your reaction to the risk of escalation?
2 years ago, even a year ago, I was more sympathetic to that argument. What has happened since then, we've crossed so many different, quote, red lines, unquote, that Putin has laid out there. Oh, if you give them F-16s, if you give them ATACMS, if you give them M1A1s, if you encourage Finland and Sweden to join NATO, we've done all those things. What it shows me is that Putin does not want escalation. I think that we need to take that risk. It is a risk, but I think it's a valid risk, particularly, Brian, against Russian forces that are close in around that border, say 300-500 miles from the border. I think those are fair game, absolutely. We can't be scared of our own shadow here.
But also, I thought in a throwaway line at the end, when Zelensky was asked about China's role, he said, I talked to President Xi. He gave me his word he would not be giving them weapons. And Joe Biden, to his credit, said, but they are giving him material for weapon systems, dual use weapons, as if I can expand on what he said. So he could have ducked that and walked, but he didn't. So what could we do about it? Admiral, if that was you and your Secretary of Defense, what would you say the president's options are?
I think he's got three principal options. One is to do clandestine operations using cybersecurity, using our CIA, using our ability to interdict supply chains. Number two, he could shine a big, bright light on it, talk about it more, put out evidence, video material, showing the case that what China says, we're not providing weapons, but what they're actually doing is providing those weapons. And number three, you could start economically sanctioning Chinese companies that are in the dual use business. Example, if you are making washing machines that use chips,
exactly,
and you're a Chinese company and your chip shows up on the battlefield in Ukraine, you are going to be sanctioned and can't do business with the United States.
That would be great. And get Europe involved, too. I mean, it'd be great for them to
100%.
Yeah. I mean, they have constantly having talks about trade, mm-hmm. and they're not happy with a lot of the things that China is doing. Get on the same page. So I want to ask you, too, about what's going on here stateside. We're low and everything besides Marines are recruiting is down. Have you seen any urgency with the contacts you have in the Pentagon? They're some of your best friends. And the White House, people that you know personally, you have their cell phone numbers. Do you see any urgency within the White House concern that we continue to not hit our marks?
I do not. And I think that this is a significant issue that has long-term consequences. If we can't bring in the cadres of truly outstanding young Americans, both officer and enlisted, in 10 years, 15 years, when that experience that we have now of those of us who fought in these forever wars start to bleed out of the armed forces, we are going to be incapable of facing the challenges of China. So I would put that recruiting shortfall, which is pretty broadly speaking across all the services, I think the Marines have hit their targets, but basically it's a 10% shortfall. We can't fight 100% of a war in 10 years if we don't hit those recruiting targets. And to do it, final thought, it's a financial aspect to it. It is a requirement of ensuring that our very best are on the front lines of recruiting. And then finally, it is, as you say, putting a focus on it, making it a priority within the services. I don't see those three things happening as yet.
This is a little political, a little bit not political. I just think Zelensky is trying to put together this peace agreement. What would a ceasefire look like? What would a peace deal look like? And he's put it together himself, and he personally asked the president to come. And the president says, no, I'm busy. He goes, no, I really need you to come. He says, I'm sending my vice president. Instead, he's going to a fundraiser in Hollywood with Barack Obama, Jimmy Kimmel, and Julia Roberts. Here's what John Kirby said about it. Cut 23.
Doesn't it look a bit bad for the president to be skipping this peace summit for Ukraine and going to a glitzy Hollywood event instead?
No matter who represents the United States. And oh, by the way, the vice president is representing the United States of America at this summit. It can't be said that the United States has in any way walked away from supporting Ukraine.
Your thoughts about that explanation?
I think that the president should go to this peace summit because I think there's a real possibility that once we get through the election, we can bleed some of the politics out of this issue. I think there's a real possibility that we could get to a negotiated conclusion. Having the president himself there is extremely important, both as a signal of support to Ukraine, but also it is a practical effect that moves the needle, particularly where we were speaking a moment ago of China. So I wish the president were going to that summit in Switzerland.
Any indication that Vladimir Putin's looking for an off-ramp?
he is looking for an off-ramp, and it's because of what you talked about earlier. The casualty rates are really immense. He's lost a million young Russian men on a population of only 140 million, less than half of ours. He can't sustain that. He knows that. And over time, he's got to find a way to get to a peace agreement. He's sending those signals now.
Interesting. And if you could just fortify what's left of Ukraine and make sure that they have some sanctity and sense of security and democracy, that might be something that everybody benefits from. Even because it's hard to imagine them getting the Donbas region back and Crimea currently without putting NATO troops on the ground. But you're the expert, Admiral. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Always great to talk to you.
Thank you, Brian, and have a wonderful weekend. Yep, all the best.
And happy Father's Day. Pick up 2054 for Father's Day for your loved one, a novel of the next world war. He will love it. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick the Show as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform and watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Great meeting. There's tremendous unity in the Republican Party. We want to see borders. We want to see strong military. We want to see money not wasted all over the world. We don't want to see Russian ships right off the coast of Florida, which is what they are right now. That's unthinkable. We want to see just success for our country. And we don't have success right now.
President of the United States, and he was great to talk to Hassan Azmi. He did a fantastic job on the interview with President Trump yesterday when he was on Capitol Hill. First time since January 6th he was on Capitol Hill. I never really got there. The big controversy with what I don't want to go over that again, but expect Jake Tapper and Dana Bash to bring it up constantly at the debates in a couple of weeks. But President Trump really won over everyone with the House and the Senate. I thought it was really significant that the first thing he did, Mitch McConnell could have avoided the handshake. Hey, I'm not in leadership. I stood in the back. Instead, he sat right there. The handshake, they took a picture. They talked after. It's done. Mitch McConnell is so transactional, and so is the president. Takes a little more personal than Mitch. It's over. What I would love to see is Trump call Elaine Chao and say, listen, bury the hatchet, because you know he went after her, and she did a great job as labor secretary. I think she was labor secretary there, or transportation. But I thought it was really good yesterday. And where's the president tomorrow? In Michigan at a roundtable with business leaders. Oh, Detroit. That is awesome. You know what he's saying? I'm not giving up on urban America. And I'm gonna try to maximize my vote in this area. If you're going to take the majority, I'm going to fight for the votes. I don't know who's coaching him to do that. I imagine Susie Wiles, but very smart. At the very least, you know what Biden's got to do? He's going to have to advertise there. He's going to have to show up there. And right now, he's not showing up much. I heard that he's going to disappear for 10 days to prepare for the debates. What are you preparing for? You know the issues. You know the decisions. Just defend the decisions you're going to make and tell us what you're going to do. You know, if you're 20, if you're a rookie politician, that's it. But you just go over the tapes with Trump. 10 days? Who's running the country?
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome back, everybody. It's my privilege to bring in Benjamin Hall, Fox News correspondent, author of New York Times, number one bestseller, Saved, and of course, a great feature on Fox Nation for that. He's got a brand new special coming out, so appropriate, Anti-Semitism in America, although it's raging in England, too. And it's only getting worse here. They thought when the colleges subsided, when they closed for the summer for the most part, except for some diminished classes, it would be over. But not if you're watching what's happening in these cities. They're actually taking over the White House, at least the perimeter of it, and then it took over downtown, outside, an October 7th memorial and exhibit for those who lost their life after the Hamas attack. With me right now is Benjamin Hall. Ben, welcome.
Hey, Brian. Nice to be here.
Ben, what are people noticing from the outside? You're back home, you're overseas. When you see the footage of the people on the subway saying Zionist, your last chance to get off, when you hear people screaming at Jewish New Yorkers, Hitler should have finished the job, outraged with people dressing like Yasser Arafat in the streets, what are you thinking?
You know, can I be very honest with you? It is, you hear both sides of the argument. I spend so much of my day not arguing with people, but certainly having, you know, heated discussions with people, because half the people I speak to think like I think. They look at these pictures, they see these people protesting on the streets, they see them wearing Hamas costumes and uniforms, they see them cheering, you know, for anti-Semitism and death to the Jews, as well as death to America, and I will come to that in a minute. But there are also so many people out there who just say, oh, no, this is just really it's all about the civilians, about Palestine, and supporting Palestine. And one of the reasons that this special, that we wanted to do this special, is because there has to be a clear distinction when, you know, hatred and some of the messages that we are seeing, as you said, in college campuses, on social media, in cities across America, that has crossed a line. And if you speak to anyone who, you know, in the Jewish community, so many of them feel afraid. They really do. So many of the people I know have been approached in the street or feel like they have to hide the fact they are Jewish. And so, look, either there are people who feel afraid that this is happening, or you get people who don't understand what's happening, who don't see the rise in anti-Semitism. And that's what's so important to realize right now is, if you don't recognize it happening, it creeps up on you. It grows bigger. And I think that's why right now we need to make very clear. We need to show, as we've done in this special, that it is getting significantly worse. And if we don't point it out, then it can get a lot worse. So there is a debate going on at the moment, and it's one of the reasons we have to keep talking about it. We keep having to show what's going on, or else people won't recognize when it takes over.
Look, during the 60s, when you watch that video, we weren't really focused on anything then. I was in single digits. I know why people were protesting the Vietnam War. There was a draft. It was an unpopular war. Some people were for it. Some people were against it. Some people burned their draft cards. I knew exactly what was it. I didn't think money was behind the Vietnam protest. It was an American protest. Whether you like it or not, I understood both sides of the argument. I don't understand this argument. And I'm wondering how much is manufactured with money from insidious organizations who want to foment unrest in America.
Well, look, one of the things we look at as well is where some of this funding comes from, you know, and there is some evidence that the IRGC, the Revolutionary Guard in Iran, is also doing its best to funnel money to try and, you know, encourage these sort of protests. They know, our enemies know, that once you have this sort of, disruption going on in America, it makes America weak. And so it is a key point for them. The Russians know full well that once you have this kind of disruption on the streets, it is better for them. And so many countries and enemies are looking at this and saying, hey, we can really manipulate this. And by doing so, we can try and divide America furthermore. And look, there is always a debate to be had. Right now, if you look at what's happening in Gaza, it's totally understandable for some people to come out and say, look, we think the civilian death toll, even though that's a result of Hamas using their own people as human shields. But look, the civilian death toll has gotten really high, and perhaps we need to discuss this and look at that. Totally get that point. But when you start talking about put on the green uniforms of Hamas, when you start saying this is the fault of Jews in general, that is what needs to stop. And that's what we're seeing happen.
I want you to hear Sheryl Sandberg, former CEO of Facebook. Cut 29.
I have a friend who's in an exec ed program at a major university. So it's like older people, like not your age, my age, who are like going back to college, paired with younger people, like in college. There's like a cohort and they go to class together. So she told me recently that one of the things her cohort does is yoga. They do it at Hillel. It's not sponsored by Jews. It's not Jewish yoga. It's just yoga in the Hillel building. And a few weeks ago, four of the undergraduates said they wouldn't go anymore because it was at Hillel. And I looked at her and I said, well, then what happened? She said, well, we moved yoga. I was like, really? Really? You moved yoga? How about that's unacceptable? How about if you said you weren't going into the building of any other group based on religion or identity, we would sit you down and be like, let's
bigot it.
That's bigoted. That's hate.
I mean, if you think it was, if there was something that was anti-black, if there was something that was anti-women or anti-gay, they wouldn't be tolerating that. There'd be marches outside that. People would be taking great pride in staying their ground. I don't understand the double and triple standard, because Jews are a minority in every country they're in except Israel.
Yeah, and look, we all remember when the Harvard professor, the head of Harvard, was asked, is calling for the genocide of Jews, what does he say? Is it discriminatory or is it divisive? And she said, well, oh, it would depend in the way it was called upon. And those are my words. But look, this goes to the very, very top of the education system in the U.S., as well as it does in other places. And so, yes, there does seem to be a lack among certain people about when it comes to targeting Jews, the way that you do say you couldn't possibly say these things about so many other groups. And so, look, it is a concern.
So when you look in the streets of London, I mean, you see anti-Semitism everywhere, anti-Israeli protests everywhere. I think it's by the majority of Muslims, correct? Who London has been really taken over by Muslims in many respects, and they don't seem to want to blend into British society.
No. Well, I mean, first of all, look, under Tony Blair, he had this policy of multiculturalism, and he said that you should come to the UK, but you shouldn't have to embrace the cultures of the UK. You can live in certain areas and you can maintain your own cultural identity because that's who you are. Well, what has happened is that there are large parts of London, perhaps in the east of London, that are totally now Muslim. And that's fine. You know, like it's multicultural, it's great, but you are seeing in some of these parts of the city, as well as some of the cities up north, Birmingham, for example, large Muslim populations, whole groups, whole areas that really are proudly talking about sort of anti-Semitic ideas. And that's really dangerous. And you see it every single weekend when you have these, you know, we have the Palestinian marches on the streets of London, and they are shutting down parts of London all the way along this large march. You hear these voices. You see streets shutting down. You see many people in the Jewish community feel they can't go near these marches because it is unsafe for them to be there. So, no, we certainly feel it here in the UK. People in the US are feeling it. And, look, it continues to spread, frankly. It's not getting quieter. It continues to get louder.
And it just blows me away because it's not a gradual thing. Before the attack on October 7th, in the Middle East, you lived it. You've been there more than most people I know. They were trending towards recognizing Israel, seeing that Iran is the problem, understanding that free trade is on everyone and free trade and travel is in everyone's best interest. And the focus was moving together. And then October 7th happens. And then we got this massive push for anti-Semitism. I'm wondering if there's a link from what you know. About George Floyd. I mean, all of a sudden we hear after the George Floyd death, we hear, okay, America's racist, and we have every major city has riots. And I'm saying to myself, how did that get organized so quick? How did anti-Semitism, where did this come from? It's almost that people are pushing our buttons.
Yes, but look, there's a flip side to that, which is actually, if you look at sort of Gulf countries and Saudi Arabia and the Middle East, those countries and the leaders of those countries have kind of made it clear, even to the State Department quietly, that they are still looking ahead to the time, certainly Saudi Arabia, they are looking ahead to the time where they can be closer to Israel. They understand that Iran is the big enemy here. And Saudi Arabia was close to doing that for October 7th, and it has had to pull back. But, you know, I fully expect to see them get close in another couple of years. Because, frankly, many of the Gulf states and Saudi Arabia are fed up with the Palestinians and Hamas themselves, you know, because for two decades or so, they've been trying their best to support them and give them freedom and build up Gaza, and all they've done, you know, is build rockets and tunnels, etc. So, frankly, you ask around the Middle East when it comes to Palestine itself, many people are saying, well, they just have to stop because they want to show their people that they are pro-Palestinian and anti-Israeli. But the truth is, the leaders of these countries, the direction they're going, I believe, will bring Israel closer to those countries in the long run. It has just set this back. So that is true at the leadership level. But, you know, when it comes to your average, you know, normal person, average day person, well, they certainly are more riled up as ever. And That's what's dangerous. The leadership thinking one way and understand the future economic benefits and the peace in the region if that happens, as opposed to the people that they will have to.
So we're talking to Ben Hall, who's got a great special out. It's called Anti-Semitism in America. So, Ben, Sinwar's comments to the leadership in Qatar, when they were talking to him, he said, "We're winning because Palestinians had died. They're a necessary sacrifice." He even told Hanaya that his two or three sons had died. That's necessary to keep the blood flowing for the Palestinian revolution. He talked about how he's winning world sentiment and that he wants Palestinians to die. So we see this out front and center. Will that change anyone's mind, knowing the architect of the massacre on the 7th wants his own people that he supposedly represent to die?
No, it won't. And frankly, it is working. It's remarkable to think that he, and we have said it from the beginning, that Hamas uses the people of Gaza as human shields. They don't mind the death toll rising because it looks bad against Israel. But that's what they were planning on doing because they knew it would eventually look bad on Israel. And that's exactly what's happening. You look at everyone from President Biden onwards who are now effectively, you know, numerous countries now saying they are recognizing Palestine as a state, that they want to really stop giving weapons to Israel. The very idea that he had at the beginning to launch October 7th and to use our own people to have them killed under Israeli attacks will benefit us is happening. It's like the administration, so many countries have fallen into the trap. They are literally doing what he wanted. And that's one of the reasons he doesn't want to do a ceasefire right now, because the longer the war goes on, the more Palestinians and Gazans who die, the more support they get. It is amazing to see it happen, and you hear very few people talking out against it. Now, I have read a couple of reports in the last week or so that said some people in Gaza are finally getting fed up with Hamas. Little evidence that we have, but you know, hopefully, you would hope that if I was living in Gaza and everything is being demolished, wouldn't it be common sense to say, if they just release the hostages, if they just end this, then I will stop being bombed? So, you know, we wait to see the people of Gaza rise up and say that it is Hamas who needs to fall, but not enough yet.
Ben, again, the policy of this administration, it really makes things worse when they think they're making it better. They say, we're going to slow down. We don't want you going to Rafah. We don't like the hard way you're going in too hard. You're not being surgical enough in your operation. They're extending the whole military conflict because they're not able to fight the war the way they want it. I'm not saying the IDF has been perfect. They're not. It's a tough operation. Special operators have told me it's tougher than anything they faced in Iraq and Afghanistan. So to go into the operation is tough. The subterranean fighting is something they're not used to. It's a big advantage for Hamas. But you let the IDF do their thing, they would have been through Rafah already. Instead, they're slow going it, extending the entire conflict, trying to slow them down, preventing weapons from being delivered. All of this just extends the conflict because Israel's not going to be finished with Hamas until they are done, almost entirely wiped out. They can't rationalize stopping short.
Yeah, I do think that many Israelis think that they should have gone in sooner into Rafah and tried to finish this earlier. You know, we're heading on to 8 months of this now, and you know, public opinion has really turned against them. But yes, they could have gone in sooner. Now, the question is, the longer the Israelis are inside Rafah, and I know I just said that Hamas may be losing some support, we don't know how much, but does every bomb that drops, does that build up more support for Hamas? Like it's interesting, how do you defeat an ideology? And this is a debate that many people are having. You know, can we obliterate all of Hamas, or are we making the ideology stronger? Now, I think from Israeli terms, it doesn't really matter for them. You know, they have said, look, 20-plus years, you know, Gaza was operating as it was, and we didn't go in this sense. But after October 7th, we needed to bring down Hamas. And they understand that it might be hard to defeat the ideology. But they said they have no choice. The one thing they will make sure doesn't happen again is October 7th. So there are two debates. One is, how do you get rid of Hamas militarily? That, I think, could be possible. The flip side is, by doing that, you know, what do you do to the strength of the ideology in Gaza? And I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, I think we have an answer. When you started wiping out Al-Qaeda, they didn't gain traction. They were wiped out. ISIS-K came up. We hit them hard. They didn't gain traction. When we took our foot off the gas and our thumb off their and our foot off their necks, like we're leaving Afghanistan, then they came back. I sense that they're going to want a presence somewhere in there. Ben, I cannot wait to see your special. I hope people get aware and understand this is unacceptable. It's called Anti-Semitism in America, now available on Fox Nation. Benjamin Hall, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
All right, back in a moment. We're going to finish things up. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Others have found ire with the media for not those checking those who unfairly attack African American women. But that same media will jump at the morsel of a chance to tear a sister down. I'm so tired of hearing these idiots call my name as Fanny in a way to attempt to humiliate me. Because like silly schoolboys, the name reminds them of a woman's rear. While they over there running their mouth, I'm over here paying them no mind.
Well, it obviously paying them mind because she says it bothers her that it happens. Bonnie Willis, the most self-important arrogant idiot in the history of the legal profession, who's embarrassed herself, her county, and taking on a former president with a case that does not pass the smell test, with a relationship with this guy Nathan Wade, who looks like a total knucklehead, got stopped in the middle of an interview with CNN when asked about a relationship he should have had down pat. She was so fed up with Nathan Wade's testimony, she stormed in and testified herself, and I think got herself into more trouble as she tries to prosecute the former president. Why was the Georgia case so lethal? It was so troublesome because you can't pardon yourself from a state case. So this will be the issue if they ever get it to trial. Right now, they're in a delay of game. And people that look at her, she thought she's going to be some big star. But upon further review, anything but.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show back in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, heard around the world. It's going to be a big hour with a big guy. Tyrus is going to be here at the bottom of the hour. The deep-thinking former wrestler, football player, who's a big asset here at Fox. And Senator Roger Marshall is standing by. We have a lot to discuss today. We know the former president of the United States made a lot of news yesterday by going to Capitol Hill. And the current president's coming home a day short of at the G7 in order to hang out with George Clooney and Julia Roberts. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
One of the things her cohort does is yoga. They do it at Hillel. It's not sponsored by Jews. It's not Jewish yoga. It's just yoga in the Hillel building. And a few weeks ago, four of the undergraduates said they wouldn't go anymore because it was at Hillel. And I looked at her and I said, well, then what happened? She said, well, we moved yoga. I was like, really? Really? You moved yoga? How about that's unacceptable?
Yeah, what about that? Anti-Semitism raging in America to a level I've not seen in my lifetime. You got to see New York City. We'll discuss a plan to beat it and how the epic violence has to be stopped while Hamas lets their game plan be exposed. They want Palestinians to die.
Number two.
It's remarkable to watch the Biden administration say, boy, we've done such a good job. We have NATO. Everybody's working hand in hand. No, you've gotten tens of thousands of Ukrainians killed.
Right.
You failed to deter. You 1,200 Israelis dead on your watch.
Yes, there's a lot to discuss here. Our foreign policy struggles on full display as President Biden meanders at the G7 while blowing off a Ukrainian peace summit the next day. It's coming up. He's sending the vice president, who nobody wants to see. Why? Because he's going to Hollywood.
Number one.
This is an outstanding group of people. I'm with them 1,000%. They're with me 1,000%. We agree just about on everything. And if there isn't, we work it out.
That is a very transactional President Donald J. Trump, who wants to be the 47th President of the United States. He was back on the Hill telling Republicans, this is what you have to do to win. Not only do I want to be president, I want majorities in the House and Senate. Let's work together to make it happen. Joining us now, a man that was there, Senator and Dr. Roger Marshall of Kansas. Senator, welcome back.
Yeah, Brian, great to be with you. It was great to have President Trump in D.C. yesterday. You know, it was absolutely electric, and it always is with Donald Trump. If I would just communicate one thing, I think you saw a united front, and I thought of Benjamin Franklin's words. We can either hang together or hang separately. If we can control all three levers, the House, Senate, and the White House, then we can do a process of reconciliation. We can save the tax cuts that President Trump gave us. If we don't, if Joe Biden is elected, those tax cuts are gone, and everyone's going to see a big tax raise. So it was a great meeting.
So it was a great meeting. I know it was a get-to-know-you thing. Talk to me about what you noticed about Mitch McConnell and President Trump. They have not spoken since 2020.
Yeah, with Mitch McConnell, everything he does is very measured. There's nothing by accidents. He was at the very front of the table, shook hands first thing when President Trump came there, welcomed him, and at the end of the meeting, he shook his hands again, look each other in the eyes, and President Trump made some very positive comments about Mitch McConnell at the meeting. And I think that they'll put bygones behind them. They're grown men. Let's put these things behind us. Let's come together. It was absolutely united front. I think 45, 46 Republican senators in the room together had a great conversation.
Yeah, very interesting, because I know Donald Trump talked yesterday to you guys, and he talked afterwards about maybe getting a vice presidential pick. Who do you think it'll be?
Oh, goodness, Brian. You're not supposed to ask me a tough question. Look, I think it's important. There's several people could do it. My focus would be making the tent bigger. 15 to 20% of people in Republican primaries are not voting for President Trump yet. Those are the people we need to focus on. I like a Mike Pompeo, a Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I think somebody that's going to be a little bit more of a known stabling force to more traditional conservatives. I wouldn't bet on those picks, but that's who I would like it to be.
So do you think that Rubio and Cotton would be bad picks?
No, I don't. I think that all those people are very capable
Scott,
of it. Yeah, there's a half a dozen. There's 49 Republican senators that are very capable of doing this job. I just want to, you know, typically you're thinking about geography, balancing the ticket. But in this case, you know, even I think he should be considering Nikki Haley still. It's all about winning, Brian. It does us no good to let Joe Biden get reelected here. So I think it's all about winning. And for Trump, this is going to be an intuitive pick. He's one of the most intuitive people I've ever met. He will listen to some advisors and the calculations, but for him, it's a gut reaction. It's a gut feeling. And I don't think he's made his mind up yet.
Do you get the sense it's more than a pot? I mean, if I told you in 2022, I know you would hope the nominee was going to win. But how do you feel now in 2024 with 5 months to go, with him dead heat in Virginia, New Hampshire? I think the polls are going to be positive in Minnesota. And then you have the other states, like he's up right now in Pennsylvania. He might be in a dead heat in Michigan. Where are you thinking this is at right now?
Yeah, Brian, and certainly that was a big part of President Trump's message yesterday. Our states that we thought were not in play 6 months ago, a year ago, are definitely in play. I mean, he's absolutely confident that he can win Pennsylvania, has a good shot at winning Virginia. Montana, he's running away with it, of course, which is, you know, those coattails are so important to the Senate. And I think that was a big part of the theme, is we need to cheer him on, because the better he does in Ohio and Montana, the better chance of upending those Democrat incumbents there and giving us a majority. So there's definitely a great positive swing. Look, I'm realistic. Some of these states are going to come home. Maryland, my goodness, we're up in Maryland right now. We got the best candidate in the world there, but I wouldn't bet
Larry
the
Hogan.
Mortgage. Yeah, I would not bet all the money. I would not mortgage our family farm that he's going to win this. Some of those folks are going to come home. It's a long time till November.
All right. So let's talk about the current president on the world stage. He only wants to take two questions, and he gets mad at one of the questions because it wasn't what he wanted them to ask about. Cut 21.
Can you give us your assessment of Hamas's response? And do you believe that they are trying to work towards a deal, or is this response working against a deal? And what is your message to allies, including those here at the G7, about what more, if anything, the U.S. can do to drive towards a peace agreement? Thank you.
I wish you guys would play by the rules a little bit. I'm here to talk about a critical situation in Ukraine. You ask me another subject. I'll be happy to answer it in detail later.
That's not your option. You remember President Trump used to walk up and down the line outside the White House with the chopper waiting, just saying, next, you, go, go, go. How dare you, especially, we're not asking about an Icelandic volcano eruption. We're asking about one of the biggest stories, if not the biggest story in the world, Hamas.
Yeah, Brian, we've not seen this much of a public cognitive decline in a political leader, maybe ever, right? And just his inability to answer questions like this. But this is the best advertisement, politically speaking, the best advertisement we can have is Joe Biden out trying to freelance questions like this because he doesn't have an answer. This issue of Israel and Hamas divides his party. So I'm sure his handler said, don't talk about that. Whatever you do, don't talk about Israel because it divides their party. It's very bad for them politically. And his national security policies are failures. He basically, the second he left Afghanistan, his reputation was gone. He'll never get it back. I mean, what a weak, frail leader we saw yesterday speaking for us. It is embarrassing, Brian, at this point in time to be an American, to be a United States senator. It's embarrassing to see Joe Biden out there on the stage. That this is the best we got. This guy has the best wisdom in mind. No, he's a weak, frail leader. It's embarrassing.
So I see that. Their column in the New York Times. They're based with Brett Stevens, who's a conservative columnist who hates Trump. So he can never write anything positive about Trump, but he is a conservative. He says if Biden cared about his party, he would step aside for Gretchen Whitmer and Governor Josh Shapiro. Number one, I know you're not a Democrat, you're a Republican, but you know things in Washington. Some of these guys and these women are your friends. Have you heard about that being a legitimate possibility?
Brian, the drumbeat is getting louder. Not specific like who the person would be, but the drumbeat is anybody but Biden, that they do not have any faith that he's going to reverse the polls. He's certainly not going to get healthier. You know, once you have this mental decline and this much physical decline, you don't suddenly get better. So the drumbeat's getting louder. They are absolutely in panic mode. I would say that, absolutely panic mode. This is why you're seeing Biden make some gestures at the border. He's not doing something at the border because he thinks that there's a national security issue there. He's doing it because it's an election crisis. So you're going to see his policies now in response to an election crisis that they're seeing. So, yes, the drum beats louder.
So you're on Homeland Security. You understand that Gavin Newsom called out Republicans for not doing anything. And he told the speaker to get a spine that he's putting National Guard, about a few hundred National Guard on his border to stop the flow. Do you think that Gavin Newsom's doing a good job like the Governor Abbott on the border and he blames Republicans?
Right. I am laughing. That's good. Makes me laugh a little bit. No, look at the numbers. You know, the numbers don't lie. Texas has had a dramatic decrease in those border crossings. And all those people, they moved to the further west. The cartel's smart. They've got logistics people just like UPS, so they're moving people where the soft spots are. They know that Gavin Newsom doesn't have a spine. I don't know what his goals are, but he's just destroyed California in so many ways. Just a land blessed with so many resources, both technology as well as natural resources. The homeless issue, people move there because they have so many like Medicaid expansion and food, you know, extra food stamps, all those things, the social programs. So no, America's smarter than this, Brian. They know that Gavin Newsom has done a horrible job as governor.
He's done a horrible job, but for some reason, people think that he's going to be the heir apparent. We're just looking at some of the things that are going down. California has doubled the deployment of National Guard to crack down on fentanyl smuggling. Congressman Issa says to save your criticism. Obviously, he represents that area. They say that it's over 62,000 pounds of fentanyl have come through the border in 2023. That's up 1,066%. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that he gives you free room, free board, and he gives you health care. Why would they not come through San Diego?
Yeah, Brian, again, you nailed it. You said it much better than I did, that they're a magnet. California is a magnet. If you want welfare, California is your state. If you want to live on the streets now and get social services, then that's the place to go to. So that's why people that work for a living are leaving California. And again, the cartel is, they are organized crime. They have professionals sitting there saying where we should send the people. And for all practical purposes, Joe Biden is complicit in this. His latest policy actually empowers the cartel. They can sit there and say, okay, we're approaching this magic number of 2,500. We got 500 spots left today. What do I have for a bid? And again, just the number of fentanyl deaths continue to rise, human trafficking exploding. You know the drill.
So we just know this. The Supreme Court has just come up with another decision. They have just now struck down the federal ban on bump stock gun accessories. It looks like it's a 6-3 vote. Sotomayor, Kagan, and Jackson dissented. I was wondering what your reaction is.
Wow. So you're telling me it's news to me right now, as you
and
do.
To me.
So Brian, I believe that the Second Amendment is what protects the First Amendment. Been a lifetime member of the NRA for many reasons. I didn't wake up and run for politics and think that that's an important issue. I think that in so many ways, the Second Amendment is the flagship amendment because that's what we've been attacked by. I think what we also need to talk about is just this attack on our religious freedom by this White House, as well as our freedoms of speech. Those other ones we took for granted as well. We'll have to go back and review it and do whatever we can legislatively. And obviously, elections have consequences. There's not 60 votes. There's not 50 votes to move anything in the Senate on this issue, though.
Yeah. Trump initiated the ban after the Las Vegas shooting. Justice Thomas, in the majority opinion, says we concluded that semi-automatic equipment with a bump stock is not a machine gun because it does not fire more than one shot by a single function of the trigger. Firing multiple shots using a semi-automatic with a bump stock requires more than a single function on the trigger. So I'm sure people have fun with that. But good luck, Mr. President. You keep talking about guns. Hunter Biden really kind of muzzled you on that. That's my personal opinion.
Yeah. Brian, a quick thought on that, though. The real problem in America, forgive me, is not the guns. It's the mental health crisis. And we're just seeing it explode with our youth. And, glad to come back someday and talk mm-hmm. about that. Some solutions. Believe it or not, Bernie Sanders and me working together, a legislation we passed out of committee to increase mental health funding. But we need an ounce of prevention, not a pound of cure. And this really comes down to families and values and our schools, what's going on in our schools. And just to throw a really crazy thing out there, what we're learning about this COVID virus now, its long-term impact on your brain, that it has shown significant impact on people's mental health, increased risk of depression for people that have long COVID as well. So we'll see where that takes us.
Yep, you are, Doctor. Senator Roger Marshall, Kansas, thanks so much.
Yeah, Brian, thanks. Great conversation.
All right, have a great weekend. Meanwhile, when we come back, I'll be able to take some calls for the first time. 1-866-408-7669. Then I'll prepare the studio for Tyrus. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everybody. Caitlin Clark, as you know, has been a sensation in sports, maybe the number one story in sports over the last 4 months. Now she's in the WNBA on a kind of a bad team, averaging 16 points a game. She was asked how it feels to be a lightning rod because people are now saying she's getting all this publicity because she's white from Iowa. She's not black from the inner city. That's the reason. I have my opinions. Here's Caitlin giving her opinion.
When people use your name for racism, misogyny, whatever, what is your response to that specifically?
Yeah, I think it's disappointing. I think everybody in our world, deserves the same amount of respect. The women in our league deserve the same amount of respect. So people should not be using my name to push those agendas. It's disappointing. It's not acceptable. But yeah, I mean, this league is a league I grew up admiring and wanting to be a part of, some of the women in this league were my biggest idols and role models growing up and helped me want to achieve this moment right here that I get to play in every single night. So just treating every single woman in this league with the same amount of respect, I think is just a basic human thing that everybody should do. Just be a kind person and treat them, how you would want to be treated. And I think it's, very simple.
Iowa values. She's not going to get rattled and play into and say it's disappointing. I think I'm a good player. It's not because I'm white. She won't play into it. That's smart.
I think it's also because she's just a decent human being and isn't looking for headlines all the time. She just knows who she is, right?
But isn't it helping? I hate to tell you, the controversy's helping. If it was just, hey, how's Caitlin Clark doing? Oh, 16 points a game. Her team is 4-4. As opposed to, they're 3-11, I think. She's traveled the country. She's had two girls just quote flat out white knock her down. She's had not made the Olympic team, which caused some controversy. We're watching a situation where if teammates don't stick up for her, it seems, when they're hit. We have other players calling her out as being overrated. Gino Auriemma, the best coach in college basketball, saying she's got to build up her body. She's too thin. She's going to be targeted. All this stuff helps. I have no problem with it. I wish race wouldn't be brought up into it. I think most people know it's a silly argument because Lisa Leslie, some of the best college players that went into the WNBA, they got big contracts. And even though South Carolina won the championship, the story was this to this woman that came out of nowhere to lead the have the all-time scoring record in college basketball. So that's historic too.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Are you going to support Larry Hogan to win that Senate seat?
Yeah, I'd like to see him win. I think he has a good chance to win. I would like to see him win. And we got to take the majority. We have to straighten out our country. So I'd like to see him win. He's somebody that can win. I would. I know other people made some strong statements, but I can just say from my standpoint, I'm about the party and I'm about the country, and I would like to see him win.
So you're endorsing him?
Well, nobody's asked me that, but essentially I would be endorsing him, yeah.
So Larry Hogan said quickly, they're not, and through Michael Ricci, he said, his spokesperson, I've not voted, Larry Hogan has not voted for Trump in 2016 or 2020 and won't be in 2024. Why is that important? Because people who in Maryland that might vote for Larry Hogan might say, wait a second, is he going to be greenlighting everything Trump does? They won't vote for him if he does. They like the way he governed as pretty much a moderate down the middle Marylander. He's winning right now that race that nobody expected. And for Trump, he's being so smart. If you actually want to get something done, not get impeached, get a Supreme Court justice through, along with winning the presidency, you got to have a Senate that's yours. And look, you can't count on Tim Sheehy in Montana, although I think he should win. You can't count on Mike Rogers in Michigan, even though I think he should win. Oh, you can't count on Dave McCormick in Pennsylvania, even though I think he should win, because everybody I mentioned are trailing slightly in the polls. So that's going to be important. West Virginia will be in this column, but you have to look around the country and see what else are you going to pick up. And you got to successfully defend Rick Scott with abortion on the ballot in Florida. And you have to defend Ted Cruz, who's getting a hell heck of a race. He's got a 4 or 5 point lead in Texas, although I think it'll ultimately be to him. What about Ohio? I mean, Sherrod Brown and Bernie Moreno. That could be tough, but it's a 5 point lead right now. Somebody who's never trailing, Tyrus, fresh off in a warm up appearance on Fox News Channel. He said, one way I could do two things. I could sit in my office, do deep breathing and stretch and get ready for Brian's appearance. Or I could warm up, try out some material with Dana Perino and Bill Hammer. You chose to try out some material with them.
Yeah, way to watch the product. Dana's out today. It's Friday. Jillian Turner was in. She did a fabulous job. But I get it. You're a little discombobulated. I saw that smut on Fox and Friends this morning.
What do you mean?
With a married man kissing a woman on live television like that.
It was,
sir.
It was 10 years ago.
Well, you know, it didn't age well.
Right.
It didn't age well.
Didn't that look good?
I got to be honest, man.
Susan Lucci.
Yes, and she had to use two hands to keep the distance. I'm an actor. I know what she did.
See, I have no
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, I think it's now. Listen. If we go to the tape, there was not an actual kiss. Were you willing to admit that to the American public?
I will not say the footage. I will not say.
So she put two hands. I'm just saying it was.
But then I put my hand up too.
Yeah, you did. You had to.
Right.
You had to. You're a happily married man for a reason.
Right.
You know how to pre-snap read.
But I was in character.
You're in
character. And it's part of my business.
You are a newsman. How would you have a character? You're a newsman.
So that's not a good excuse?
That's not a good excuse. I'm just saying your behavior was shameful. I'm saying you're better than that. You're better than
that. But Tyrus, when I was doing that, you were in the WWE. You didn't care about me like you do now.
No, but even then, I would have said B. What are we doing? What are we doing? I expect that from a gut fill. I don't expect that from a man of your integrity.
But do you watch General Hospital ever? Come on. Athletes
everybody
will watch
soaps. And right. Here's the awesome thing about it.
Yeah.
Is that if we, you and I right now turned it on, we would pick up where Two we minutes. Left off. Doesn't matter. We would never have to discuss what years we watched. Right. We could pick up right where we left off.
Well, I don't even know. I think they're streaming now. But you know what I think is so interesting is during college, Luke and Laura were hot. And Luke and Laura on, was that All My Children? Or was that General Hospital?
Stefano De Niro was the guy. I think it was like One Life to Live was the bad guy. And then, what was it, Victor? Victor was the OG on the one show. And then All My Children was Susan Lucci and Adam, I believe. Yeah. My mom was in love with Tad on All My Children. So that was another thing, too. If you stayed home sick from school, you had to endure
right.
mom's soaps.
Here's it. Oh, when mom was home.
Yeah.
With me, I was alone. So I got I Dream of Jeannie.
Yep.
That was big. I would watch the game shows. Let's Make a Deal was always big.
Whammy was pretty cool.
How about this one? You probably are not going to be able to get this one, but this is the best one ever. Not even on the repeats. Natty and the Professor. Did you ever watch that?
Natty and the Professor. Wait, that came on right after the banana thing, the circus. All the creepy animals.
Oh,
things.
I didn't like that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't like that either. Banana Circus or whatever it was. Yeah, I didn't like that.
Yeah, I mean, I watched a lot of those were good. The Ghost of Mrs. Muir.
Yeah.
Fantastic. These were good to hate. I remember we were big into Domestic Help. We were big into Benson, Hazel.
Yep.
We were big into that.
Mr. Belvedere.
Florence, Mr. Belvedere.
Nell.
Why is that? Like, were sitcoms funny from the Domestic Help perspective?
Because the Domestic Help was the only person that was real. Like, in the whole,
right.
Like, they had all the answers.
Alice?
Yeah, they're everyone else around them, but the custodial person, or the house cleaner, who's the boss, same thing. They solved everyone's problems because they were real. They had the real job.
I remember Bill
Cosby. It was a good message.
I remember the Cosby Show was hot, and it's not airing now, but I remember Bill Cosby wants to be a doctor. Is he still on?
Cosby's still going strong.
Okay, good.
Phil Huxtable did nothing wrong.
True.
He's a character. He did nothing wrong.
Right. I heard some things about what was going on that set, though, from people that worked there.
Yeah. Well, apparently they were just, you know, just winning Emmys.
That's
all I want to discuss.
But I would say this. But he wanted to be a doctor. He wanted the perception to be.
Yes, because if you're a learned doctor, apparently, you know, I'm not going to go. You almost got me to go there.
Right.
I'm not
going
to go there.
No, because they want to show the black community that you know, you ascend.
Yes.
Yeah. And in a fun way. And kind of. So are you on tonight on Gutfeld? Or today, this afternoon?
Yes, I'm on Gutfeld tonight, and yes, I will be on Respect Kilmeade Watch.
But you never do. Like, you never.
I always throw
in.
My hands up. He's a friend. Why? I say the same thing all the time. Why? I don't understand the ruthless attacks.
But you know, I think Jesse's getting it worse now.
Jesse is getting it worse, but it's a different reaction. Like, when he says it to you, the crowd laughs. Oh, that's not Kilmeade. We know our Kilmeade. When he says about Jesse, they're like, oh, that's kind of true. So it's like, it's not the same thing. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, the crowd knows it's ridiculous when he besmirches your name.
So the other thing
they're
that
– convinced that Jesse Waters is a little
I am surprised out of the three-hour show that we did this morning on Fox and Friends, you picked out Susan Lucci when I was also wrestling with Hulk Hogan. Did you see that?
Listen, I just figured you and I would never talk about wrestling again after what happened. You just want to bring it up, man. I just, you know.
Did you see me? On that? Did you see that, Allison? Me wrestling with Hulk Hogan?
Just say yes, Allison.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
I'm just saying is your performance with Lucci was memorable in the fact that you tried to defame and trick and fraud the public. That kiss is fake news. That's the first documented case of fake news, ladies and gentlemen. That was, and you tried to pass it off, and that's what's disturbing. You're better than
Now, me. Have you had an on-screen kiss?
Yes. Because
you are an actor.
Yes, I have, yes.
And I
hear. It is the most uncomfortable situation.
Terrible.
You just it's you're all day. You're like, it's a complete stranger. Like, it's a complete stranger. And, you know, and then the worst part is someone's telling you what to do. The director's like a foot from you going, do this, put your hand here. And you're just like, ugh, you just want to get it over.
Let me ask you, are you attracted to the person?
No, you're not.
That's the problem.
Because all you're thinking about.
What if you were, though?
Well, then you would probably
not be
a very good actor.
Right.
You know, but.
Oh, really?
It's not the movie makes it look awesome, right? It's intense and the music. None of that's going on. It's two people chewing a ton of gum going, all right, let's just do this. All right, let's just do this. It's like jumping in a cold pool in the winter.
You worried about your breath?
It's just you think about everything. You know, it's like you don't know this person.
That's why I couldn't act. I couldn't act outside
my personality.
Yeah,
I saw that with Susan Lucci. You proved that without a shadow of a doubt.
No, I look good in that moment.
No, that, but I'm trying to tell you as a friend. Like, right. I'm glad that your producer had the good sense to bring me in to talk to you about this, because she's like, he's ruining everything he built on this lie that he's doing here. Can you, Tyrus, do you mind?
This is actually intervention. Right.
This is an intervention. There's a line of guys coming in to talk to you.
Really?
Yeah. We got to get you back on the right path, man.
I think it's too late.
Couldn't get Lucci to comment, but I just want the American people to know that that was you acting.
All right. So I do this thing on One Nation, which we got to get you on. We're going to talk about when news goes bad. I want you to do it.
Okay.
But so we do this thing on One Nation that you might want to steal. You could. And it's Bring One Nation on Vacation, where you could take the thermos.
You sent it to me. And again, for the third time, I liked it. I put it in my stories as per your request on Instagram.
Can I share it with my radio audience?
No, please go ahead. Please.
Like, can you act a little surprised?
Plug. You know what? You know what else he did?
It's also
walks up to me in the middle of the day. He's like, Tyrus, how are you, man? I said, listen, let's not stand on ceremony here. You know, I know exactly why you're here, and I've already liked it and moved it in my story. And you literally said good enough and was on his way. So
wait a second. So and also, you say I name drop? What is that about?
It was just me, you know, Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali. We're just hanging out at a Starbucks before it was the Starbucks. You know, and Mike Tyson walked in, and, you know, it was really cool. But it was weird because Jimmy Carter was picking up the tab. So, you know, it was just you're always – but you know what? You are – All joking aside, though, you have had an amazing career. No, seriously, you have had an amazing career. I will go back and look at YouTube of you and Jim Brown together. Man, you guys were magic. You guys had really good chemistry. It was a lot of fun.
Well, no, we did get along. I think that towards the end, my personal feeling that his family didn't like him too associated with Trump and Fox.
Yeah.
And I felt like there was a little bit of a distance, but I've called Monique since. And we've had great conversations, but I felt like the last few years, they didn't like that he was in the Oval Office with Kanye West. And I think they're worried about that.
Which is silly, because Jim Brown is an institution.
You think I'm right, though?
I think you're probably right. You know what? And that's horrible, if that's what it is, but you're probably right. There was a lot of that going around, and I'm hopefully – well, we're seeing that it's changed. It's no longer taboo to say that you support the president.
You know, it's interesting – and I want to look this up. We're going to use this today. Jay-Z has come out with a program. So I was on with Charlamagne the God. I'm not name dropping. I know it sounds like I am. But I was on with Charlamagne the God.
Yeah. Okay.
And I said to him, one thing I would love to say that I think we both can agree on is school choice and open up more charter schools in New York City, because the performance is great, especially among minorities. There's families lining up for it, and it'll be a great equal playing field. He goes, well, what's stopping it? I go, what do you mean, what's stopping it? Teachers unions are stopping it.
Yep.
Well, the money is there. The buildings are there. He had no idea. And he said, I'm literally, and there's nothing wrong with that. It can't be on every issue. He had no idea. Well, Jay-Z had an idea. And he's actually pushing for that in Philadelphia, and I'm sure it's coming back to New York. I think that is huge.
Well,
that's a bipartisan move that I think Trump can execute right away.
I think that's a school choice should be. And I also think we need to look at and good teachers who do the work, who pass their PTE 200 and 300 classes.
What is that?
The accreditation. I went to a teacher's college, and to become a teacher, you have to pass a series of tests. And they have substantially lowered the bar now for educators. So there's a lot of teachers that have their credentials that are frustrated in the classroom to see the social issues are outweighing the core issues. We need to have private practice, not just homeschool for like individual. We need to have neighborhood private, just like a lawyer goes into private. We need teachers to do that. And where they have homeschool classes for groups of kids in neighborhoods, parents get together, work together with the daycare. We need to privatize education. So then the teachers' unions, which you're never going to get them to cooperate on anything. We saw that in the pandemic. They were more concerned with leveraging our kids for money that they weren't going to share with anyone.
But I think they showed that. I would just be worried that maybe, you know, certain states and certain cities would not have the bar the same way. Do you believe there should be some type of standardized test so you know at least what you should be hitting?
In terms for as a teacher, yes. I think teachers should be constantly.
I'm talking about the kids.
But the kids, standardized testing, it just depends on what the goal is. I never was a big fan of just a random test. If the if it's going to be based off of the curriculum that they're learning all year, to have them to test that they're retaining knowledge and gaining knowledge and showing an interest in knowledge, however,
said teaching to the test,
just teaching to the test, yeah, or just like, you know, but core education needs, we need to reinvest in math, we need to reinvest in to being able to have a conversation and write a sentence and understand what a structure is. We need to reinvest in those things. We need to reinvest in trade schools. It's no longer, we no longer have to burn becoming a plumber and electrician to push, get a college education.
I hear you. Let's do it. It's a lot cheaper. Tyrus is not doing anything in June, but he's going onto the stage July 9th.
Yep.
At Embassy Suites in Loveland, Colorado. He's going to be July 11th, Reveland Center in Elkhorn, Nebraska. We have two affiliates out there. Brown Grand Theater in Concordia, Kansas, July 12th. Did you sign off on this? July 13th. This is going to kill you. Back at the Embassy Suites in Hilton Norman Hotel and Conference Center in Norman, it's Oklahoma. And the 15th, the next day, 2 days later, you'd be at the Palace Arts Center in Grapevine, Texas. On the 16th, Palace Arts Center, again, two back-to-back shows. I'm just getting that. Yep. July 17th, Texarkana Convention Center in Texarkana, Texas, on the 17th. And that'll fill out your summer. Hopefully you take August off. So go to Tyrus's website, and you can see, get all those tickets and those VIP opportunities.
Yeah, we're pretty much, the tour is pretty much sold out. So
it says limited access.
Yeah, we don't have many left. We have a lot of singles. So.
Amazing. Yeah, back in awesome. A moment. More with Tyrus in just a second.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I've noticed, Cyrus, I've been dying to talk to you about this. The President of the United States is getting panicked about the black audience. And what he said at Morehouse, College, was all-black college, basically said, America sucks. I'm sorry about that. Yeah. And then he says it again on the Juneteenth speech. Here's a little of it.
It was about a statement of faith. It was testimony of a testament to the resilience of generations of black Americans who kept their eyes set on the nation's North Star. That North Star was the idea that we're all created equal, an image of God, and deserve to be treated equally throughout our lives. While we've never lived up to it, we've never fully walked away from it either.
Was a great speech, barely audible, but you know what he meant.
And
you
know no, I don't. Stop it. No one knows what he meant. It's provocative. The North Star represents what? The North Star represents freedom and independence.
Do you know what that means?
No, I have no idea.
But it was in the prompter, I'm sure.
Yeah, when you have no message, and that's really the problem with the Biden campaign. Like, what are the three main things that Biden's running on?
Finish the job. That's what he says. I want to finish the job.
Yeah. Well, what is the job? Because you're not allowed a follow-up question. No, if you don't elect me, it's the end of democracy. So the follow-up question would be, how so? How does it end?
Right.
What are the signs?
He's going to tell Congress to go home. Donald Trump's going to tell Congress to go home.
Yeah.
He'll take it from here.
Yeah. That's going to happen. Not. Again, their entire campaign is not Trump. So you don't really have to do anything with that. And his speeches are misguided, out of touch. You're talking to black people as if we don't live with everyone. As if we aren't a part of this society. The color of our skin it's so insulting to think that your pigment is the reason why you vote or the reason why you think, to where we're just so shallow that we
can't get an ID.
Yeah, we can't do anything without having to go by the mirror and remind ourselves every day we're black. He reminds us every day that we're black when he speaks. He doesn't have to go to these events and talk black to us, okay? Just do whatever it is that you normally do,
right?
Because it's about earning. It's about your tax bracket. Right. It's not about your color. And they just don't get they miss it, and that's why people are getting tired.
If you don't mind, it's going to be awkward, but Allison, would you stop talking white to me? That's all I ask. Can we make this an agreement?
You know what? We're done here. We're done.
We are. It's the end of the hour, actually. Yeah. Thanks. But, Tyrus, if you
I'd
want
like to say always a pleasure. But
it didn't really work. Not this time.
No, as awkward as your kiss scene was.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. What a week we've had. So glad you're here every step of the way in the Brian Kilmeade Show. Great to see everyone in Dallas this week. We're able to add Hartford as well. Now we're finally being heard in Connecticut. And then 2 months before, we added Richmond. So the show continues to grow. And thanks for being there. Bottom of the hour, we're going to talk to Michael Richards, Kramer from Seinfeld. Brand new book out. I'm blowing through it. It is really good. If you're an actor, by the way, or a comedian, you got to read it. It's almost a handbook. Shannon Bream is standing by. Shannon, we've already had a Supreme Court justice decision come out. And the Supreme Court justice decision says that when the Trump, right after the Las Vegas shooting, Trump banned bump stocks. The Supreme Court says it's not a machine gun. We're not going to put it in that category. Therefore, they're no longer banned. Is this a surprise?
I don't think so. I mean, it was a 6-3 decision. And, you know, from the arguments, we thought this was probably the way that they were going. Yeah, like you said, the twist is this happened under the Trump administration, which most people would think in their minds he's going to be more expansive of gun rights and Second Amendment rights and that kind of thing. But all throughout this opinion today that multiple justices mentioned that 2017 shooting and how much it impacted everybody at the time it happened. It was just so devastating and overwhelming. I mean, the sheer numbers. That ATF moved forward with this, and so now there's still so many questions about that shooting. That's a whole nother show. But for today, they say, listen, you know, if Congress wants to fix this, they can amend the language. They can make the statute more clear. They can say that bump stocks do qualify under the same statutory language as a machine gun. You saw the dissent from Justice Sotomayor signed on to by Kagan and Jackson saying essentially if it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, swims like a duck, it's a duck. They think bump stock equals machine gun.
What else do we can we expect another decision today? We got one yesterday. Could we get another one today, or is there a certain time?
We're done today. So we're waiting on another abortion case, another gun case. Of course, Trump immunity decision, the January 6th obstruction charges. I mean, there are all kinds of things we still have to get. I think about 23 decisions left between now and we think June 28th. We think they'll wrap up by then.
So it's very interesting what's happening now on Capitol Hill. The former president is there, and then he addressed yesterday 200 CEOs. Now tomorrow he's going over to Michigan. He seems to be in full stride on this campaigning, and he's got to be buoyed somewhat by the polls. How surprised are people in Washington that Virginia's a dead heat, New Hampshire's a dead heat, a slight lead for the former president in Pennsylvania, and Michigan is 1 or 2 points? What is the sense in Washington? I know Trump and the other Republicans really feel like he's got this.
Yeah, they feel good, but they're also starting to get a little uncomfortable with the fact that all these polls are so good. And in states like Virginia, you mentioned, where President Biden won by 10 points last time around, the fact that that's a dead heat. And there's a lot of polling when you dig down into it, how people feel like they're doing financially. It's not good in states like Virginia. And we know that drives a lot of people to the polls. Democrats, though, they're pointing to this special election this week in Ohio that was closer than Republicans thought it should be, that they think Democrats are under polling and they will overperform like they did in the non-existent red wave of the midterms. So it's weird because you feel a little bit of discomfort on the GOP side, like, oh, these polls look so good. We don't want people to think this is in the bag. We want them to turn out because, you know, all of this is going to come out to who you can get to turn out.
I want you to hear what the president said about the most intriguing thing about the Republican convention, and that is who he's going to pick for his number two. Cut five.
A lot of folks surrounding you. Some of them are on the short list for VP.
Yeah.
Was your pick for VP in that room with you?
Probably, yeah. Probably. I don't want to go, but probably. I think we'll probably announce it during the convention, sometime during the convention. So, there were some good people in there. We have some very good people.
So you're seeing J.D. Vance on television today, Tim Scott on television today, Doug Burgum on television 4 straight days. They don't mind it. Let everybody know, we're going for this. I've never seen anything quite like it, but that's typical Trump.
Yeah, and, you know, so we've got Governor Burgum on with us on Sunday. We'll do a deep dive on his policies, where they line up, where they don't with President Trump, and how likely it is that they end up together on the ticket. You know, listen, he likes having these folks out there who are jostling for the position potentially. They're good advocates, many of them, for him out on the trail. But you and I have talked about this. I really think he does do something at the convention, like have 4 finalists up there, like a Miss Universe pageant or like The Apprentice or something. Like, you're fired, you're fired, you're hired, you're my VP pick. I mean, he's a great producer and he knows how to generate buzz. And I don't doubt he would do something like that.
Yeah, it would be very, very interesting to find out. I also thought this shows the president is finally getting it. when he goes out of his way to say nice things about a guy that doesn't say nice things about him, Larry Hogan, cut 7.
Are you going to support Larry Hogan to win that Senate seat?
Yeah, I'd like to see him win. I think he has a good chance to win. I would like to see him win. And we got to take the majority. We have to.
That's all he can. This is what his handlers have been trying to tell him now for 8 years. Think about what's around the corner. Don't overreact to what's happening in front of you. And I think he gets it. Finally.
Well, listen, if you win, you're going to need, yes, a Senate that is going to pass your nominees, pass your legislation. And, I mean, that knee-jerk reaction that we saw to Hogan after he said, you know, after a guilty verdict, like, you got to respect the judicial system. I mean, that came from Trump's inner circle, basically saying, your campaign's over. They've thought better of it. But, of course, now, you know, Hogan says, as we expected he would, no, thank you for this endorsement.
It was Chris LaCivita and it was right. Lara Trump.
Right. And I think that they know, listen, they got to stick together to try to win. But they also know Hogan's got to run his own race there in Maryland, where he had pulled from independents and Democrats when he was governor. And so for them to put out that statement yesterday, like, no, thank you on the endorsement. We didn't support him in 2016, 2020, and Larry Hogan will not support him this time. That's what he's got to say. So do you give him the room to, you know, campaign the way he needs to trust, you know, possibly pick up a seat that would be very helpful to you should you become president again?
All right. That's interesting. So the retort back is from Mike Ritchie, who I know is actually his brother, coached my daughter in soccer. It says Governor Hogan has been clear that he's not supporting Donald Trump, just as he did in 2016 and 2020. I hope Trump can keep his powder dry and not respond to that and understand that also gets Hogan votes.
Right. I mean, I was really surprised that we didn't get another Chris LaCivita or someone else saying, like, all right, you Jack A, we just, you know, gave you this endorsement. Don't punch the, you know, former president back in the face. But I do think they have that understanding that, listen, Maryland is a really, of the seats that they hope to pick up, that's one of the toughest. And Hogan was very popular. I live in this area. I'm not in Maryland, but I hear from those folks a lot. And they liked him because they thought he was willing to stand up to the party when it didn't align with what he thought was best for his constituents. So he has to be able to make that case in Maryland. The last thing he wants is probably what's already happening is for them to pull that bite last night with Aisha Hosni of President Trump saying, yes, I support Larry Hogan. You know, they're going to run that over and over again and say, like, Larry Hogan is linked to President Trump. He can't be independent, which will not help him in Maryland.
Shannon Bream from Fox News Sunday, the same one, is talking to us now. Shannon, Brett Stevens, a conservative columnist with The New York Times who does not like Donald Trump. He's almost like Bill Kristol. There's nothing Trump can do to make him vote for him, but they are conservative by trade. He writes in today's New York Times that the President Biden should step aside to allow a rising Democrat to take his place in the race. He argued that the only option left for Biden to clinch a win for the country would be to drop out of the race and let Governor Josh Shapiro or Governor Gretchen Whitmer take the reins if it's about winning. And I think people are looking at the speech that he basically was incomprehensible on Juneteenth. They're watching him wander away twice at the G7. And they're seeing a president that needs a day off after landing in Europe. They're seeing the problems he's having with his family, the story in Politico that came out that if I wasn't running for president, my son wouldn't have been convicted. Your thoughts about what's happening inside Washington about his column?
Well, listen, they've been saying this stuff. That blistering column from The Atlantic a few days ago that called him Ruth Bader Biden, like, it's time to exit the stage or you're going to lose the priorities you have for this country, not just your seat, but potentially the White House and all of these other things. So there's growing pressure on him. We've been hearing this for months, if not more than a year, though. This is not the nominee Democrats want. James Carville is out there with his, well, I would say hair on fire, but he doesn't have that. But you've seen him and heard him. Like, he is completely freaked out. I just don't know what their play is at this point, because President Biden is clearly not willing to walk away by his own choice. It's very late in the game. He's a presumptive nominee. I mean, you're heading to the convention literally in a matter of weeks, obviously RNC first and DNC, but that's in August. I mean, you could argue that's weeks away. I don't know what their play is here. You know, the latest crazy theory I've heard is that he gets one of the Supreme Court justices to step down. He nominates Vice President Kamala Harris to join the court, and then they put together a whole new ticket with other people. I mean, Washington is getting a little crazy when that's the kind of stuff they're floating.
Well, I just tell you, I mean, I just don't know how you can watch what happened at the G7 with him walking away twice in the middle of nowhere on a golf green where the where Maloney, the prime minister
of
Italy, has to grab him and bring him back and think to yourself, and you see the cover, the meandering President Biden, and you say to yourself, he's trailing in all the polls, and now if he falls on his face in the debate, you wonder if something like this will happen. It's all going to be unprecedented, Shannon. It'll be like an earthquake.
Well, it is, and I think that that debate in less than 2 weeks now is huge. I mean, they agreed to it when they were, you know, these two candidates were going back and forth. You know, President Trump has said anytime, anywhere, and once they got that bite from the Biden campaign, both sides claiming victory about how this thing came together. But the fact is, there's a lot on the line. Now, Republicans have set the bar so low for President Biden, sort of like with State of the Union. They came away from that feeling very good, that he was energized, he landed punches, and that he did well. So there's a lot of focus on this, you know, week and a half from now on this debate. And if he does well, if he at least meets a minimum standard, Democrats may breathe a sigh of relief. It may reassure those people within the party who consistently say they think he's too old. We'll have to wait and see. There's another column out today that's talking about putting Hillary Clinton on the ticket. So I think that they're floating all kinds of ideas because they're very nervous.
All right, just fascinating to see Hillary Clinton go for the opponent of a sitting congressman, Jamal Bowman, who's about to lose anyway by about 17 points in his primary because he's an embarrassment to the country and the city, you know, pulling the fire alarm, anti-Israeli, anti-Semitic phrases, really anti-American. I don't know why people in New York would think he represents them, and they're rejecting him. And then Hillary Clinton weighs in. And I'm wondering, why would she do that? No one needs her to weigh in. I mean, why is that?
Well, I wondered, too, if Latimer, the guy that she endorsed, if there was some personal connection that was very important to her with that particular candidate, because you're right, it raises questions about why she would be getting into that particular race. So I wonder if there's a personal connection. I don't know. Is it that she wants to chatter about her being some de facto, you know, alternative leader of the Democratic Party, that she wants that out there, too?
All right. Who's on your show?
Doug Burgum is going to be with us, and we'll dive down. I'm sure he'll give us an answer about whether he is the guy or not. We're working with the White House. There's a lot of foreign policy, and with G7 and everything else, we'd really like to have them join us on the show. And so we should know shortly if that's going to come together.
All right, that'll be great. On One Nation, you could expect
Saturday
to
night,
see Patricia Heaton.
For my show.
Yes, Patricia Heaton's going to be on. She's coming out. She's a Christian, but she's coming out for the Jewish community, fighting back against anti-Semitism.
Very strong.
I hope she's going to be good. I know she will be. Professor Wilford Riley's going to be with us. Yeah, and we're going to find out if President Biden's doing the right thing and trying to get the black vote by talking about how bad America is, which I don't agree with. I think America's pretty cool. Judging by all the nations, I could live anywhere, and I've chosen this place, and I think that means something. And I also think we're going to have on Craig Carton to talk about what's happening in sports, especially with women's sports. Shannon, women have to go watch women play. How many times do I have to tell you?
I mean, listen, my house has sports on all the time.
Good.
But you know the man I live with. We're watching sports all the time. He is not.
But would you watch women's sports?
Anything and everything. Yes. Listen, his sister, who is the fifth out of the six Breams of his siblings, was such an incredible athlete that her college basketball and volleyball jersey are retired. You know, he's got a professional athlete in his family. His brother played Major League Baseball for 10 years. Sid Bream, and everybody thinks Teresa Bream is actually the best athlete in the Bream family. So we have a deep appreciation of women's sports for sure.
All right, so just spread that to America. Women support women.
I'll work on it.
That's all we need.
I'll do it.
All right, thank you, Shannon.
See you Saturday.
Okay, and this is the one time we'd have to have 20 questions about Donald Trump's trials, because thankfully, we've had a week without Donald Trump news when it comes to trials. Just the people that are attacking him and frustrated because they haven't gotten him yet. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. When we come back, I'll be able to take your calls, I promise. And we'll also take a look at what's happening today with the Middle East. It looks like Hezbollah is full bore after Israel. They took out one of Hezbollah's main commanders, and it seems like Hezbollah's holding a grudge. Shocker.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We're back. I'm thrilled. In about 10 minutes, I'll be talking to Michael Richards, Kramer from Seinfeld, about his career, served in Vietnam. This guy had a real tough upbringing. He's able to overcome a lot, spent some time in prison, able to overcome that. Had a lot of success, natural talent as an actor, as a comedian, and Jerry Seinfeld loved him for the first time he saw him on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Here is a clip as Kramer, well, enters the doctor's office.
Ass man. No, these don't belong to me. I'm not the ass man. I think there's been a mistake.
What's your name again?
Cosmo Kramer.
Cosmo Kramer. You are the ass man.
No, I'm not the ass man.
Well, as far as the state of New York is concerned, you are.
Did you get your new plates? Oh, yeah, I got my new plates. But they mixed them up. Somebody got mine and I got their vanity plates.
What did they say?
Ass man.
Ass man?
Yeah, ass man, Jerry. I'm Cosmo Kramer, the ass man.
Who would order a license plate that says ass man?
Maybe they're Wilt Chamberlain's.
It doesn't have to be someone who gets a lot of women. It could be just some guy with a big ass.
Yeah, or it could be a proctologist.
Yeah? Proctologist?
Oh, come on. No doctor would put that on his car.
Have you ever met a proctologist? Well, they usually have a very good sense of humor. You meet a proctologist at a party, don't walk away. Plant yourself there because you will hear the funniest stories you've ever heard. See, no one wants to admit to them that they stuck something up there. Never. It's always an accident. Every proctologist story ends in the same way. It was a million to one shot, Doc. Million to one.
That is so funny. The DMV gave it to him. To hear the thing about the book, they just talk about the creation of these scenes and how it came together. And Jason Alexander has a photographic memory. So you show him one thing one time. I think Bob Costas the same way. He memorized it immediately. But it also intimidated everybody else on the cast.
Really?
And especially people that didn't write it. Like, so if you write it, they still weren't memorizing it. And Jason Alexander would look at it once and just nail it. So I think that... They said that, and I heard Michael Richards in another interview say that he sat down with his son and he watched the whole thing because he did not want to watch it because he always felt it could have been funnier. So he did not want to watch it back. So he said, screw it. To write this book, I'm going to have to watch everyone. And he did. And he thought it was hysterical.
So he should have watched it earlier, or you think he was able to appreciate it more since time has passed?
I think maybe that. And plus, it clearly holds up. I mean, it's still the hottest syndicated show around. However, there are people that look at Seinfeld and they'll just, it really shocked me, don't think it's funny. I know anyone who watches MASH, no one says, doesn't think it's funny. Cheerleader, Cheers. Everyone's like, oh, it's really good. Taxi. I put Seinfeld in that category. Some are all in and some are not. Like, for example, I don't like Friends. Do you like Friends?
I enjoy Friends, yes.
10 out of 10, 1 to 10, 10 being great.
Probably 7 or 8.
I would put it 3.
Oh, that's low. Kind
of predictable, gets me a little anxious.
Anxious?
Time. Yes.
Why? Friends gets you anxious. Oh, gosh.
Eric, don't laugh.
We're coming to a break and you say that?
I know. Hey, coming up next, Michael Richards. Got a great book out. He's going to be with us in just a moment. Don't move.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Guess who's coming up on June 29th? I'm going to have a chance to go on stage again in Indianapolis, Indiana at the Sherman Theater. That is 29th, Saturday night. Begins at 7 o'clock. Meet and greet around 5, I think. That's where I'll have a chance to meet you, answer your questions, take pictures. And everybody in the meet and greet gets my latest book, Teddy and Booker T, Two American Icons, Forge a Path to Racial Equality. And I'll have a chance to talk about history. But it's going to be fun. And we always talk about, too, it's going to be inspirational, motivational. And the one thing I do is go back to talk about sports. You know, I wrote the book, The Games Do Count, interviewed 72 people about what they did in sports that led them to success in life. And then it's how you play the game, talk about the values and ethics you learn in sports that pay off later on. You'll recognize just about everyone on the table of contents, 92 interviews I did for that. The book on tape includes some of those remarks. In fact, one of the people I interviewed was Jerry West. And Jerry West, who just passed away, maybe the most famous, iconic basketball player ever, done everything on the court, then a coach, not much success, then became a general manager, president of the Lakers, then went out, helped the Golden State Warriors form Clippers, as well as the Grizzlies. But one thing he told me is he just had a terrible upbringing, and it was horrible to be in the house. So he'd go outside in all types of weather and just shoot the basketball. And he ends up being maybe the greatest shooter player of all time, who only won one championship as a player, about 8 as various places as an executive But really haunting him. The guy had a perfectionist quality in him. But those stories, and it's how you play the game, the values and ethics you learn in sports that pay off later on. And that's a little bit what I talk up on stage. And I'm also going to be in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania at the end of July. Just go to briankilmeade.com. You can order tickets and get the meet and greet opportunity too. Hope to see everybody there. Also, quick note, I'm also in One Nation Saturday night, coming up at 9 o'clock Eastern time. Amongst my guests, Patricia Heaton. Everyone loves Raymond. You know her, but she's talking something serious. She is standing up for the Jewish Americans who are under attack in all these major cities, especially and these college campuses. I'm going to be leading with that this weekend, I think. And I think it's the number one story. And as usual, we don't see much of this on other networks. Even though we got a quote from the Hamas leader saying, my goal is to have the IDF kill Palestinians. People don't see through it. He thinks the longer they last, the more the world is going to turn against Israel. I don't see it that way, but we're going to talk to her. I'm going to talk to Craig Carton about what's going on in the world of sports. Aaron Rodgers' mysterious disappearance at the Jet camp. It's mandatory. Man, the Jets are so invested in the 40-year-old quarterback who was out last year. They can't afford to have him go MIA or whatever he's doing. Hopefully he turns up, and I want to get Craig Carton's take on that. Tom Brady got inducted into the New England Patriots Hall of Fame, had a great speech. And at the end, Bill Belichick came out and gave him a hug. Now, he came back into Foxborough to do it, a place that just fired him 6 months ago, unable to get a job. And keep this in mind. He had the Atlanta Falcons job. And Arthur Blank, one of the founders of Home Depot, called up Bob Kraft. And he said, listen, I'm about to hire Bill Belichick. What's it going to be like? He said, not good. If you like that family atmosphere, he's going to totally lock you out. He's going to lead the football decisions to himself. He's very cold in the hall. He's got to get used to that. And Arthur Blank, he said, I'm passing. Not going to do it. So he didn't. And that story got out. So it's bad enough you get fired. Okay. But then to stop him from getting another job, I want to hear Bob Kraft's side of the story. But the other thing is, too, if that's how you really feel and you're friends with Arthur Blank, don't you have an obligation to tell him what it was like working with Bill Belichick? I don't know. We'll see. Without Tom Brady, it doesn't work. It looks like those two are back. I'm going to talk about those two things and Caitlin Clark. I want you to hear this. So Caitlin Clark got asked again after a practice, given all the interviews. She is the iconic member of the WNBA. She's the reason why ticket sales are up. Viewership is up. People are knocking her all over the courts, making news. She was asked, how you feel about people saying that the only reason that you're popular, that you're bigger than the game, is because you're white, great smile, and people like to think the Midwest person can still be a standout basketball player. Listen to her.
When people use your name for racism, misogyny, whatever, what is your response to that specifically?
Yeah, I think it's disappointing. I think everybody in our world, you know, deserves the same amount of respect. The women in our league deserve the same amount of respect. So people should not be using my name to push those agendas. It's disappointing. You know, it's not acceptable. But yeah, I mean, this league is a league I grew up admiring and wanting to be a part of. Like, some of the women in this league were my biggest idols and role models growing up and helped me wanted to achieve this moment right here that I get to play in every single night. So just treating every single woman in this league with the same amount of respect, I think it's just a basic human thing that everybody should do. Like, you know, just be a kind person and treat them, you know, how you would want to be treated. And I think it's, you know, very simple.
That's Caitlin Clark. Perfect answer. When we come back, hopefully Michael Richards, we're trying to catch up to him now. He'll be on with us. Also, we'll follow the news coming out now about President Biden heading back after a private meeting with the Pope, where the Pope says he's a great Catholic despite being pro-abortion, which is a little strange. Don't condemn the rest of the world and give him a pass. But he's meeting with all the G7 now, and the president's going to hop on a plane. He's going back to America to hang out with Barack Obama and George Clooney. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time to bring on Michael Richards, actor, comedian, author of a brand new book. It's excellent. Entrances and Exits. His recall of his life is just phenomenal. Brings us back to his military days, his growing up days, anything but easy, as well as his Seinfeld days. If you love Seinfeld, you'll love the insight he brings. Jerry Seinfeld writes the introduction, and they just hit it off from there. Michael Richards, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, hi. Hi.
So listen, I love the book. I mean, everything I didn't know, I kind of picked up it after Seinfeld. But the one thing about it is pretty clear. The chemistry we saw on television is the mutual respect you and Jerry have in real life. How did it start?
Our interest, yes, ultimately, in making comedy. You know, that's really it. That's the bond between the two of us. Getting to the ha-ha, making people laugh.
He thought you were funny. He saw you on the Tonight Show, right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he saw me and said, I think he could play Kessler, who was at that time the Kramer, called Kessler.
Right.
And there you have it. Yeah. Yeah.
So he brings you in for an audition, and you got the sense that the network really didn't want you. And later you would find out it was true. Jerry made sure you made the show.
Well, he did. Yeah, he was. He really liked what I was doing and saw me as a next door neighbor. Yeah.
I mean, would you say you were natural, Michael? It just seems as though here you are in school. You have an opportunity to do something. You took to it right away. You understood laughter. You had this natural physical comedy to it. What was it like to have this type of success at this point in your life when you had a lot of turbulence early on? You never knew who your dad was. Your grandmother had schizophrenia. Your grandfather died when you were young. And then suddenly you have success on the stage. Can you bring us back to that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's a great reception to be so well received. Being an actor, being pretty good at it, and delivering. Wow, career is unfolding. I'm alive. I have a vocation. I can support myself through what I'm pretty good at doing. Oh, it was just wonderful. Brought me into my manhood. You see, it's a way of growing up, meeting my community. I'm alive. I'm with my humanity. Hurrah.
Right. And you're doing it and you're getting laughs and you had a thirst to do that.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, if I was doing a movie in your life, I can't believe what I'm witnessing. I'm getting stressed going through it. I mean, here you are and you get picked up hitchhiking. The guy's a killer that you're with. It looks like a Bonnie and Clyde knockoff. Next thing you know, you're part of this threesome that steals a tire. You could be in jail for years in Oklahoma. I mean, I'm reading this. I go, could this really happened?
Oh, it does for everybody. It's a passage. It's coming into my manhood as a boy, hitchhiking, being on the road, all of the experiences, the adventure. You know, when I went into the service, it was all an adventure in a sense, you know, coming into my manhood. I didn't have a father. The service was so alive for me, the responsibilities.
Became a medic.
I was a medic, and that came from an experience I had in high school. My mother was a medical record librarian. She got me a job as an orderly, and then during the summer doing that job, in my senior year, I was an ambulance attendant. So when I was in the service and they saw this kind of experience, they sent me to medical school, and I was trained as a medic, and I was a damn good one.
And that was a great thing to be in the service. I mean, you big guy. You didn't think you were going to be in the infantry in Vietnam, but you did have a skill and an expertise. You also figured out that you can fight through pain. You talk about being, it seems like you're doing planks, how you're describing, and there was a punishment, and you just didn't quit. And then they spotted this in you. What did you learn about yourself?
The strength and the stamina to stick with it. I learned that when I was in basic training about bucking up. I remember one time I was put in a cockroach position by a drill sergeant. I'd fouled up. He said, "Get in the cockroach position, Richards." And it was a strange position where I lay on my back, my legs are straight up, my arms are straight up, and I have to hold this crazy position until I just can't do it anymore, and I break down. Well, I had a conviction that I wasn't going to break down. I was going to hold this position. And he's yelling at me to die, cockroach, to die. And I wouldn't die, and I held that position. And then he told me to get my feet, finally did, and I was looking at him, and he says to me, "You see?" And what it was, the lesson was, you can't buck up. You can stick in there and have the strength to get through the pain. And so when we're talking about suffering, the necessity of getting through something, not so much to defy it, but to come into a kind of consciousness so you understand what the suffering is bringing you, the message in it. And you get strong from that recognition of what the message is.
So interesting. And then you have I guess it was 2006, you're on stage, you have that meltdown on stage, you write about it in your book, and you said it can be traced back to your deeply rooted anger issues, as well as the sexual assault that you experienced in your youth. I guess you, with going through the...
I had no sexual assault. My mother was sexual.
Oh, okay, my bad. Sexual assault. So
that we could clear that one up. Yeah, go ahead.
So tell me about that. You just laid low ever since that incident. Obviously, an ugly incident. You don't make excuses for it. It was wrong, but you laid low for a long time. But yet you knew you had to address it, and you're doing this tour. How would you want people to interpret that today?
Out of that great mess. There's a recognition of what it's about. That's just it. What we think is a mistake, yeah, it's a wrong, but how do we get the right out of the wrong? Again, what is it that's taking place that brings us into an understanding of why we are in that place? Certainly an understanding of myself in the place of myself through these kinds of experiences that come about. The whole thing is here to inform us.
Right. So, and you work through it, but I know Jerry tried to get you out a few times. You wanted to lay low, but now are you going to come out? I mean, you don't have to accomplish anything else. You got the syndicated deal that's going to set you up for generations. But what do you want to do next now?
It's the book. You know, I spent four years writing this book, and this is a way of stepping out into my community and sharing my life. So, you know, and that is the moment at hand. What this brings about? Hey, I'm in a great conversation with you. You know, it's being connected and in communication. We're talking. We're feeling each other. We're getting to know one another. The bigness of ourselves all together on this planet, breathing the same air. I'm involved. I'm here. Hello. My book says a lot about myself. So how do you do?
I want you to relive this moment as Cosmo Kramer loses the contest.
Well, where's my money? Who caved?
Not me.
Not me.
What are you looking at?
There's a naked woman across the street.
This is going to be the easiest money I've ever made in my life.
I'm out.
What?
Yeah, I'm out. I'm out of the contest.
You're out?
Yeah.
Well, that was fast.
Well, it was that woman across the street. You know, you better be careful, buddy. She's going to get you next.
And then there were three.
What are your thoughts?
Oh, man, what a great clip. All the funny. The competition. How we compete. Who's going to come out on top? And, you know, Kramer's so real. It's not even about who wins. It's just Kramer's. There he is. He is Kramer. It's funny. I don't know. What do I think? It's great humor. My God, it's just so funny. That was, you know that Larry David won an Emmy for that episode, the contest.
Right.
I
couldn't wait for them to describe
it. And you know, the network didn't want to do that because they were hung up on the masturbation. They thought, oh my gosh, we can't have a subject on like masturbation, primetime television. And Larry, of course, just threatened to walk out. I mean, that's it. If he can't do that show, he's not going to write the show anymore. And they did the show, and it won him an Emmy.
I always get the sense, I mean, you're the professional, classically trained, you could do anything. And Jerry Seinfeld never said he was a great actor. He's just one of the funniest, greatest writers, best stand-ups ever. And everybody else has got a lot more experience. You mentioned Jason Alexander with a photographic memory.
Yes.
But you didn't want to watch the show back until you started writing this book. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's right. We put those shows together so fast, and when I would look back at them, I always saw how they could be better. And so it just but much later in my life, putting together the book, of course, I did watch the shows, every single episode, with my son. And that really helped me get to the memories of putting episodes together, what was behind it all, and certainly the development of Kramer.
Were you a good judge? Were you a fair judge of yourself? Were you less judgmental? You were able to appreciate how great you were?
Less judgmental. Yes, I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah, I was less judgmental, far more objective, and just recognizing the greatness of this show. My God, I'm so proud to be a part of it.
And the friendships that you still have today. I mean, Jerry would take a bullet for you.
He would. He has. He stuck up for me, you know, and he writes a great foreword to this book.
I hear you.
And, of course, he's in the book. We get to see Jerry, everybody, and their contribution to the show as a whole. Yeah. And the friendship as a whole.
How Kessler became Kramer, how Larry David, his role in this, why he didn't want to play himself. Michael Richards' unique journey through it, through the bad, the ugly, and he's back. Michael, congratulations on entrances and exits.
Oh, thank you, Brian. Thank you so much for this. Thank you for having me on.
You got it. And go out and get the book. You will not regret it, especially if you're in comedy or you want to be an actor or a director. It really gives you inside the process. Michael Richards, thank you, and thank you so much for listening. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget, Saturday night, 9 o'clock, One Nation.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.